feel misaligned at work, looking to shed some weight, looking to quit smoking, or just feel better about something in your life in general, Looper, I'm Greg Bornstein, your host of the show, and I am a trained hypnotist and hypnotherapist. If you're looking for quick change, book a free discovery call with me in the show notes, and you'll happily experience transformation now.
Open loops.
Open loops. Open loops.
Open loops.
Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
One G, two G, three G, four G. Find yourself in a nice, relaxing state as your unconscious mind is now tuned in for its favorite late night talk show for the Shamelessly Fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Good morning, everybody. What an open loop I have for you today. You don't know what that means, open loop? I'll get to it later. I'm Greg Bornstein, consciousness disruptor, cultural hypnotist, curator of experience, and of course, the person that brings you a lot of weird conversations. Very strange. We're talking, this is a fringe show. We're talking about everything. Everything that's a little taboo, you know, the magical, the mystical, the hypnotic, the secretive, the conspiratorial, the supernatural, the paranormal, the esoteric, the abstract, the philosophical, and the deepest questions of them all, who and what we really are. Yes, I am here to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. Now, what does that mean? Well, here's what it means. It's trying on new hats. Kind of like my non-Jewish friends when they came to my bar mitzvah and said, can we put that little thing on? Yes, it is. We are going into different reality tunnels, different versions of existence, different ways of being, as we discussed in the last episode, and shifting perspectives by hearing someone out completely that we might not normally talk with, to experience perhaps the journey that we didn't realize we've been on or going to be on. Wow. Now, I have to say, tomorrow is my Masonic birthday, my High Mason birthday, I'm calling it. My 33rd, as they say. I'm turning 33 tomorrow, January 21st. And I thought, you know what? Let me throw up an episode the day before that has it all. Time travel, cloning, alien abductions, conspiracy. It's got all the wild stuff. And yet it's been very much contextualized and pieced together by the experiencer himself. Tony Rodriguez calls himself a secret space program experiencer, and I saw his new book, Ceres Colony Cavalier, a true account of one man's 20-year abduction, just came out this past winter, getting great reviews, and I wanted to hear his story. I love hearing people that are in these secret government programs, because you're sitting there and you're going, could it be? We know the government doesn't tell us everything. We know it. I defy you. Who's the person that is saying, well, no, I trust everything they're saying right now about everything that's been going on in the government? Really? You do? I don't believe any. Look, if you are an establishment person and you trust every word that the government says, come on my show and talk to me why I should. I'd love to meet that person. That would be fringe. That would be fringe. No. We know there are agendas. But as Tony says in this interview, they're good people and they're bad people. Sounds like he had a pretty bad experience growing up in this program, because it happened in his childhood. And I won't give away the full story, but yeah, it's going to be hard for some of you to swallow. And listen to the way he tells it. Listen to the way he tells the story. Feel inside the truth of it, if you wish. Or don't believe it. But this is this man's story. He's sticking to it. He's corroborated it with certain things, even scientific facts about the planet he was on. And it's just, or not planet, was it, somewhere, yeah, I think it was a planet, the Ceres Colony, it is, I don't know what's up with this man's account, but, if you're looking to go in a new reality tunnel, get ready, this is a vortex, this is a portal we're opening your mind to, and, you know, for someone to go around and just tell this story over and over and stick with it, again, something's going on, right? Why is this the, something's happening here? I just don't understand it. And maybe we're not meant to. You know, that's what they say. We're moving beyond the point of understanding. And, well, now I'm certainly confused. Oh, well, we have a show. We have a show to get to. So, here's the deal. If you enjoy Open Loops, make sure, I would appreciate it. It would mean the world to me. If you, let me know what you like about it. What kind of interviews are you liking? What kind of, what do you want to see more of? If you can go on Apple Podcasts or even now Spotify and rate the show and leave a couple words, I would greatly appreciate it. It would really help out. Now, Space Force is here, but what if I were to tell you it's kind of been going on for a lot longer? Here's Tony with a tale. Today on Open Loops, Tony Rodriguez, a secret space program experiencer. He is the new author of the series of his autobiography called Ceres Colony Cavalier, as well as the co-creator of the show Talks with Tony, which is on his Patreon. We're talking Disclosure, Consciousness Expansion, and just the true account of a 20-year abduction. Very curious about how this all comes together. Tony, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hello, thanks for having me. Trying to get out, now that the book is released, I'm trying to get out and talk to as many people as I can and generate some buzz about the book. I think the book is a lot easier to disseminate the information than the ways I've done it in interviews in the past. So I think it's important for people to know that this level of technology is out there, that you know, that basically our governments have, and that these kind of things do happen. And a lot of people that have seen my interviews in the past have contacted me and felt like they've had similar things happen to them. There's a lot, you know, I'm not the only one that's come forward with this. So
yeah, no, I appreciate the sometimes when you're talking to so-called whistleblowers or people that have come forward, there's a bravery that is applauded. People go, oh my gosh, wow, for you to come forward and share these experiences, you're going against the government there, they something could happen to you, all this stuff. I mean, what was it for you? Did you have a mixed relationship with sharing these stories? Did people warn you against it? How did it happen, Tony?
It all kind of fell in my lap. Man, I guess from the very beginning, I always remembered the first 30 minutes of the abduction. So they take you, and there are many different reasons why they interact or take people. They took me, and I was essentially a slave and worked for their programs for 20 years. And then they had the technology to put me back to the same night that they took me in the same physical form. So how they do that is a long story. You know, you can sort it out for yourself. There's other interviews, and the book explains some things about that, but there are many people that claim they call it a 20-year to a career return program, a 20 and back, or a 20-year tour. But anyhow, that's what happened to me. And they erase your memories. You wake up the next morning kind of wondering what happened. And after a few weeks, I remembered the initial first few minutes of it. And then over time, the beginning of the abduction, the first 30 minutes, basically, they just for whatever reason can't erase, or they don't erase that. But the rest of it I couldn't remember. And so I would poke my head up and study ufology every few years and see, I would research it and see if there was anything that was it described what I remembered seeing.
Right.
And what I'd, you know, I would study ufology and see if there was anybody's testimony, you know, through the 90s, the 80s and 90s. And see if there was anybody's testimony in ufology that was like what I went through, what I remembered being taken. And there wasn't. And there were a few close ones, but nothing really hit home. And then later on in 2015, I saw Randy Kramer's information, and he explained how they can take you, because I had all these other memories that were bleeding through that were not, they weren't like a dream. A lot of people say, well, you just dreamed it all. You know, it's not like that, because in a memory, you can remember how you got there. If you had a dream about going to the beach and you go, how did I get here? You really don't know. You never did get there. You just, right. It began at the beach and it ends at wherever, right? In a memory, you can remember, you can go, how did I get here? And you go, oh, well, we took that car and then I had breakfast and I brushed my teeth and I woke up here. You have those memories though, when it's a memory, and that's what it was. And all through my teens and my early 20s, I was getting these memories, and I couldn't make any sense of them. Like, when could that have happened? I had one clear memory of standing on a spaceship, looking out the window, flying over the planetoid Ceres with a geyser coming out, you know, watching water squirt out of a geyser in a crater. And it was a very clear memory. I always had it. I was like 17 when I began to remember it. And I thought, and in the memory, and that's why I knew I had a career. I had just taken a break from work. Like, I had memory of the day of how I got there. And I thought, when could that have happened? What is this? You know? And
yeah.
So I just brushed it off. I thought, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Whatever. I'll move on, get on with my life. And then when I saw in 2015, Randy Kramer explained that they abduct you and they can keep you for 20 years and put you back. And I went, oh my God, that's what happened. And as soon as I was able to, you know, I was brushing the memories off and kind of in denial. And as soon as I accepted, I thought, they had me for 20 years. When that happened, I went, oh my God. And then other memories, all the other memories that I was brushing off, I thought they started to come. And I went, oh my God, that happened. And that happened too. And then one, you know, just like remembering anything that you've forgotten, once you remember one little bit of it, more memories come, right?
Yes.
Like Greg, you know, I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
I'm about to turn 33.
So do you remember your 21st birthday party?
Vaguely, right. So yeah.
If we start talking about it, you're going to remember more and more.
Yes. Right?
So if I say, well, if I press you, like, who was there with you? Now you're going to think of those people and they go, what'd you guys do? What'd you eat? These memories are there. You haven't forgotten them. You haven't thought about them in a long time. It's like a muscle. And so the more I press you, the more things you'll remember about that day. And it was the same thing for me. Like once I began to remember these things, more memories came and more, and it went on for months after.
Wow.
And I got to the point where I thought, I didn't want to take it to the grave. I didn't want to be on my deathbed and go, I was in space. There was a space program, you know, like, and try to, you know, in the last hour, try to explain it all. And the other thing is I was having a hard time coping with what I remembered because there were some pretty bad, dark things. And I was on, you know, during that 20 years, I spent 6 years of it, 6 or 7 years on Earth. So there were two of me on Earth in the 80s, essentially.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I know it's you lose the audience, the people that are unfamiliar, you lose people. They give you that 1,000-yard stare. But there's a time travel aspect of it. So I believe that it was a clone, that they cloned you. And right. In order that that the clone is like a vegetable or, you know, not smart. And then they have to take some of your essence, your spark of life, your consciousness, and take it out of you with some form of science and put it into the clone. And that's what drives it. This is just a theory on my part, but it kind of fits with what I remember. And then I was in Seattle. I was in Peru. I was in California. There were places. And when I got my memories back in 2015, I thought, okay, so I remember this place in Seattle, which I can prove because my family members, everybody close to me can attest that I've never traveled to Seattle in my life, you know, in my natural life, that Tony, I'd never been to Seattle. And I remembered the house and I thought, okay, well, I got on Google Earth and I found the house. I found it and I described it. I went, oh my God, it's real. And I started, I thought, I can't go to counseling for this. You know, I'm not going to go to a real counselor. They're just going to medicate me. There's no good outcome of me going to counseling. They're going to be unequipped for what I'm going to say for all this. And so I got a hold of some researchers, people that were back then, the subject matter was just starting to gain traction in ufology. So the secret space program subject matter in ufology was really taking off in 15 and 16. And I got a hold of some researchers and had a back and forth, and they asked me, and it was really great. It was really great therapy to have somebody to talk to. That was a big deal. But they asked me to do an interview, and I did. And one interview led to another, and people just asked me to do interviews. And then after a while, people wanted to talk to me on the phone about their what they felt, what they've been through. And I just couldn't keep up with it all. And that spawned the creation of the website. And I was always told all along to work on a book. I began working on the book in 2015, believe it or not. And it took 6 years to come to completion. And I would have never done it if I wouldn't have had help from Jackie Kenner and a girl named Amanda Lara, who helped me transcribe it and write it and edit it. So I think if you're interested in this stuff, a lot of people feel they've had it happen to them too. I think the book will be a lot of help.
So I appreciate that you've been working on this for as long as you have, and wow, I mean, after 7 years, it's finally out there to the public. Do you notice, I mean, have you corroborated anything with people who've, I don't know if you've ever connected with Tony or Randy Kramer, but else out there? I mean, Corey Good, other people, do you remember some of them from being part of the program? I mean, what's going on with that?
Well, I've talked to quite a few guys that have come forward. Some of them came forward and decided speaking publicly about it wasn't for them. And they went
right
back. You know, like we had Jason Rice, who gave us an amazing testimony. And there was overlap with Jason Rice and my testimony. Those are things that kind of prove, you know, because again, the burden of proof is on you, tall tales. So everybody's like, well, where's the proof? And right. I've had hired private investigators. I've had people that have helped me, people, online investigators. I found quite a bit of supporting evidence. And and really nothing super damning against what I remember. So every time I get a memory and I go, well, maybe we can check this out and go into it and check it out, that you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe if this will disprove it and I can pack up and get on with my life. And each time that there's something circumstantial, I don't quite get the smoking gun, but it always fits. It always supports and doesn't disprove a lot of time things in Peru. The biggie I had recently was in the beginning in 2015, I called out, I said that on Ceres Colony, where the geyser was in the Auhanna crater, and that the white spots on Ceres that people thought was a city when the dawn. And I said, no, that's salt. Those are deposits of salt. That's a geyser, and it's like seawater, and right. It shoots up into the sky. It shoots out into space, and the water evaporates and the salt snows back down. And that's what's left there is salt. And then the Dawn probe got there in, I think it was early 16, late 15. And their first scan of it, they said, no, it's not salt. It's like a cocktail of, you know, I forget what they said it was, but like sulfur and a bunch of other stuff. They said it was a bunch of chemicals that it's probably that. And so a researcher asked me, do you want to retract your statement? You're on the record saying it's salt. It's like it's salt. And there's a little bit of magnesium there. When we flew over it, I had a conversation with an officer on the ship. And I said, we should be able to do something without, because not only is there a lot of salt there, you're talking about, you know, 3 feet deep of salt laying on over a mile. And, I said, there's got to be something we can do. And he said, maybe you could go down there and scoop it up. We could have a nice bath. He said, it's just salt. It's basically just salt and magnesium. So I said, I held my ground back then in 2015 on the record. And I said, there's a geyser there and those deposits are made out of salt. And NASA said, well, we have to compile the data. The Dawn probe made several passes and different instruments scanned it. And it took them, it wasn't until August of 2020 that they published the results of the study, and sure enough, it was salt.
Wow. So
that corroborated me. That was a big day for me, because that morning, right after that NASA, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday. I forget what day it was, but I was leaving for work in the morning and I looked at my phone and I got a ton of, everybody was emailing me, Tony, you were right all along. You know, you called it out and it's, look at this article. And I tell you, I walked that whole day. I didn't touch the ground. I was just so thrilled because you get beat up. You know, it would be weird to anybody listening to this. If you're skeptical, I totally believe it. I totally get that. It would be weird if somebody listened to what I'm saying and just held it, you know, and everybody just believed it verbatim and said, okay, that must be it, without wanting more to check it out and such. So, you know, I've sure taken my licks from people. No one's really given me a very structured, logical debunking conversation, you know, like a skeptical conversation. The skeptics are immediately violent with me.
Right.
You know, you're lying. I'm going to beat you up. That's basically what I've got. It's taken a lot. I've taken my share of abuse for speaking publicly, and which is okay, because I understand where they're coming from. You know, in order to believe what I'm saying, you have to unbelieve something big.
Yeah.
And, so I get that. But so when that happened and I actually had some kind of real evidence that was, you know, official evidence like that was on the record, fully on the record and everything, that was a big deal, big moment for me. It was just, I was moved by that. But there are tons of other things. I've uncovered the paper trail of the CIA grill flame project that in 82 that I would have participated in Daniel Kern. And I found the funding for that.
Wow.
The results of a lot of that stuff for the remote viewing program. The places in Peru are checked out. You know, I got from it's in the book. It explains a long story, but I have a tattoo of a scarlet winged macaw on my arm. And because of something that happened to me in Peru during that time. And so that was like one of those things that the 20 years, it was, most of it was very negative. And that was something positive that was life-changing for me. So I got a tattoo of it. And recently we're trying to get down there, but it's just a lawless area. You're in a great deal of danger to travel to Puerto Tahuantinsuyo, Peru, as a gringo especially. And we found the info in like the town square that got built while I was there. I found pictures of it, and the scarlet winged macaw is all over the place. Like that's, there's, you know, it's just little things like that that are not a big proof, but there's just a hundred of them. There's a hundred of them, and none of them none of them are don't not check out. They always support.
Right.
And the house in Seattle in 2016, I drove there. I actually went back to the house that I stayed in for a couple years in the 80s, from 84 to 86. And in 2016, I had to see it for myself, and I drove there, and I thought, you know, I won't, if I don't remember it or something, then that's fine. I'll move on. But what happened was, not only did I know the house, but I knew the area. I knew the stores nearby. I knew the roads. I found my way there without the map, and I knew my way. It's on an island in near Seattle, and I knew it. And I'd never been there. It was a freaky thing. So, that, you know, to tell people that, they go, yeah, right, Tony, that's not proof. But to me, it was. I had to prove it to myself, really, before I felt comfortable speaking about it in public. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. This is all very fascinating. Tell me this. I mean, I'm curious. Was there stuff going on when you were a kid that you can point to as going to set this precedent for you taking part of this program? And what do you think? Because I've heard people who are part of time travel programs and whatnot, people have come on the show who have said, well, my family had a connection to Roswell. Yeah, my family came from a certain lineage that, you know, we're just, our family has these experiences. I mean, I'm curious about your roots and your family connection to any of this, A. And then B, also, what happened when you were a kid that may be a sign that you were going to take this journey?
So that's a good question. I do go into depth in the first chapter of the book about it, but I found working with people that there are some common denominators. The Navy is always involved there. Well, firstly, it's not just one group or one organization that has access to this stuff. There are several different groups that take people for many different reasons. So one person's experience can vary widely from somebody else's. My personal experience, I went to school with somebody who had access. There was a boy in my class that I did not get along with, and we literally picked on each other. We were rivals, and he tells me one day, he said, my dad's an Illuminati. What's your dad do? And I had no idea what that was at the time, but it stuck out of my mind because of the way his body language while he said it. And his dad came in and was actually a judge at the science fair like in April of that year, of that school year, 81 to 82 school year. And he pointed me out to his dad and he said, dad, that's that boy I told you about. You know, I was clearly saying that we were rivals and we hated each other. And it was the following night that I was taken.
Wow.
So it was as a form of a punishment. And talking with researchers, and, you know, this is off the record, but other told me that's actually a common theme, that a lot of people are taken as a form of punishment. Like they piss somebody off, the wrong person. And because they have the power to do so, they'll throw you in one of these programs. You'll do the hard labor because they need people and it's an excuse. And that's exactly what happened. I went out there, I did hard labor for 20 years and then came back.
Oh my gosh. So wait a minute. The next night. Now, do you remember what exactly did that night? Was that something you had to uncover after a long time, or did that night stick out vividly to you?
Well, yes. So the initial 30 minutes of it all, I always, like I said, I always remembered that, and I couldn't understand, you know. And then think about the average, you know, what's the Betty and Barney Hill, you know, your typical UFO encounter is, we saw some lights, we were driving in the car and we saw some lights, and then it came down over the car and the car quit running. And I don't remember what happened that we woke up and we were groggy and there's no memory. They had their memories erased. Now we're finding out that they may have been taken not for, you know, and they think that the whole incident was 30 minutes. And now we're finding out that, you know, in order to travel great distances of space, you can also afford to travel time. And people may be being taken for not just a few days or weeks, but for years, and then being put back only 30 minutes later and to get on with their life. So when you think about that kind of aspect of it, A, it'd be very valuable and very useful for many reasons. And B, it sure makes more sense than just taking somebody. Why would the ETs, you know, because that's one big question of the skeptics. Why would they take you? Why would they do that? You know, why would they take you and leave you in your car for 30 minutes in the missing time? Why? Well, now when we apply this to these testimonies, Randy Kramer's, mine, many, many, many others, when you apply it to their testimony, now we have a motive for why this happens.
Right, right. So, my gosh, so they take you, and I mean, what was that first time like? Are you on a spaceship? Are you? Because that's always confusing to me. I'm confused about, is it ETs that the government has? Is it ETs? Is it even, or is it just government workers with their flying saucers taking you away? I mean, what is the initiation into the secret space program?
I'll give you the short answer. It's yes.
Oh man.
So, let me just set this up a little bit so that it makes sense. Since I've gone public, I've been contacted by more than 2,000 people, thousands of people. That it all said this, man, I saw your interview and it triggered me because I remember going through something similar. Can I talk to you? And we'll talk back and forth for a while, email, some people call me. And what I've been able to extrapolate is that there are several different programs taking people, and I put them all into categories so that I could make sense of it, because I'm not a researcher. You know, by profession, I'm a wood, hardwood craftsman. And so I'm not a researcher. I'm not somebody that's done that, you know, I pursued a lot of higher learning in life, but I ended up being a researcher. It fell in my lap. So in order to make sense of it, I started taking people's accounts and putting them into categories. And I put three broad categories. And the first category is human-based space programs. So this is like the United States government. The United, seems like the U.S., Canada, and England, and France, they have a program that's like slightly less. It used to be slightly less advanced than like the breakaway Germans. So the World War II Germans had a space program, and they aligned themselves with a local group of ETs called the Orion Group. And what they did was they aligned themselves with them so that they could access the technology and get into space. So when they take somebody, the experience has a few common denominators to let you know that that's who took them. When the United States, when the program takes people, they have common denominators, and the experiences are all kind of the same, that people report the same kind of stuff. And so it kind of lets you know that these are human-based space programs, secret space programs, right? So that's my first category. The second category is the local group, but the ETs. So the ones that are in league with the breakaway Germans, but these are ETs. These are grays, and there are insectoids. There's reptilians. There's humans, you know, that work with them. But this is that group. And I found that people that get taken by them typically have a very negative experience.
I've heard that, too, about the grays in particular.
Yes. So, you know, for data to make it easier to talk to people, I organize it. And the third group is everybody else, because here's what's really happening is that we are being visited and being taken by an infinite number of other races as well. So most people have the idea that if we get into space, that it'll be still very far to the next star, and that it will be sparsely populated with only a few dozen other species that we'll interact with, or whatever, 100 species, 900 species, maybe. Some people say there's 800 that are 900 that are in contact with the government. And that's not true. From what I remember in my service, there are an infinite number of sentient spacefaring civilizations, and they can get here, space travel from here to another galaxy, and then to another galaxy, and then back is almost instantaneous once they get to that level of technology, so that they're doing missions and they can access 400 million stars in our galaxy and 400 million other galaxies and all those stars. And 7 out of 10 stars has an Earth around it or a habitable planet around it, and times, you know, a million galaxies. So that's how many different species, if you break it down, even if it's less than 1%, that's how many species come through and can interact with us and abduct us. And they have all different levels of technology. So if you're a researcher, it doesn't make sense. It sounds like gibberish when you interview 10 people and then the 11th one says, no, I could see through the ship. I can see every, you know what I mean? Like it says they have different levels of technology as well. And they abduct people for different reasons. And some of them are, they do a fair trade with people. Some people have a positive experience, even if it's a surgical procedure that, you know, they have good things happen to them. And some people have bad things happen to them, but they're all over the map. And the fact is that people of the earth are probably, you know, reborn from having lived out there. And so they get contacted from old friends.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things going on. It's a very complicated thing, and it's hard to, and because it's so widespread and because of the level of technology, it's not always the same thing. It doesn't make sense to the skeptic.
Right. Well, that was the other thing I was going to say, and I'm curious about sort of your quick responses to this, because, yes, at the logical level, and as someone myself that has an experience but is so open-minded and even in a way wants to at least experience the positive things or the good, the better than, you know, I mean, I'm not, sometimes I wonder if they're listening to me and going, okay, Greg, we're just going to take you on a spaceship and traumatize you just so you can actually know it's real. Not sure that's how it works, but I do wonder, you know, you can understand why when Neil deGrasse Tyson says, yeah, why are the photos always blurry? That would make sense to the general public. You can understand why, you know, this idea there, if there are so many of them and so many different species and so many people around the world have had these, well, I guess that's my defense. So many people have claimed they've had experiences that's one thing. But I suppose when it comes to tangible physical evidence, it's always some rare thing. Oh, look, we can't quite say what this is. It's an anomaly. They're called anomalies. There's not like a space for all of them to be there. You never really, I don't know, that smoking gun thing you were talking about, I find it is, it's elusive. Now, I've heard different defenses that it's by design. I've heard that, you know, there could be a mass uprising if people were to see, if the aliens were to come down and say, yeah, we've been here, it would shake everything up. That's what you often hear. But I'm curious from someone that says you've been inside this program, why do you think it's not just, okay, we're going to drop the veil and here, look, they've been here. Duh.
Hey, well, that's also a great question. And The premise of the denial of it is because it's based in an arrogant assumption that we are on smart enough to figure that out, that we couldn't be fooled,
right?
That we are smart enough to not be fooled. It's an arrogant thing to think that. We're talking about, so think about it. I love this analogy. You take the U.S. United States Special Forces, so like a SEAL team, or that level of technology that the special forces have. These guys have, you know, stealth helicopters and all kinds of gadgets that we don't even aren't even aware of. And they're very effective at what they do in warfare. If they wanted to go into South America to where we have these tribes of people that have never been had contact with the outside world, you know, these indigenous tribes that are still pristine and not been, if we sent the special forces there to abduct one and put him back without him knowing it and not leave a trace, do you think they could do that?
Probably, yeah.
Probably easily.
Yeah.
They have satellites and airplanes and all kinds of, they can see at night. We could do it. They could sedate people from a distance. They have great amount of, we have a great amount of technology. Now consider that we're working. We are those stone men. We are those stone age men versus people that have time travel. So when you think about a program, you think about the government that wants to cover up something, they literally have time travel. Quantum entanglement technology, which is real, there are many papers published on it that it's a real thing, that and that we just can't build one, which is probably a lie. That all you would need would be a quantum entanglement communication device and put it on a satellite that's flying very fast, and pretty soon, in a week or a month or two, you could send text messages to yourself in the future and in the past. It's as a proven science that everybody agrees that this is a technology that's real, but it just doesn't exist because we don't know how to quantum entangle. Well, probably classified, but you see developments happen
Yeah.
In the world. And if I could send a text to myself 3 days ago and then text myself back till now and communicate with myself, there would be a great deal of things I would be able to do that no one would have any choice to stop me. And I could cover up all kinds of things. Somebody came out with evidence and I sent a text to myself 3 days ago, this guy came out with evidence, go get rid of it, and I was the government, then you would never, ever, ever prove anything that I wanted to not be proven.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? When you take the analogy that our technology now could let us do this undetected to an aboriginal society, we are the aboriginal society, and we're being dealt with people that have technology, not 100 years in the future, but 10,000 years in the future worth of technology that they're trading with ET races. They're trading with other races. And that's why the gap in technology is so huge. So yeah, they can walk all over us. There's nothing we're going to do about it. We are a guy in a loincloth with a stick in the
right
woods, compared to a special forces in a stealth helicopter flying over. That's really, you know, and it times a million. So that's why when people go, well, when Neil deGrasse Tyson said, boy, they're awfully shy. Well, you know what though? Your radio telescope has a barrier on the outside of the Kuiper belt that blocks all the radio signals. So that's why your telescope is blinded. And there's an algorithm for the Defense Force in every telescope. You know the telescopes in the astronomy department, every telescope, like the Pan-STARRS, for instance, is a large telescope, a 6 gigapixel telescope that watches the whole night sky. The United States Air Force has software in every telescope that blacks out classified satellites.
Wow.
Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
So all the telescopes of the college, the people that are, these are civilians that are astrophysicists. These people have access to these telescopes that can see the whole night sky at once and zoom in on it with great detail. They admittedly know, and it's normal, it's a regular day at the office, that the Air Force blacks out objects that fly across the telescope, that there'll be there's a computer program that immediately blacks it out. And so this is built into the system. So how can the system find anything that's up there? How would they see anything? They can't, because they're
that's
way
a great
of
point
us. That you get on and on and on. Like, it's very arrogant to think that we have the means to discover the means to even combat or discover a society that's 10,000 years ahead of us in technology. It's right. Very arrogant to think that. And that's really what academia is premised on, being arrogant. You know, I'm smart because I went to school for a long time, so I'm smarter than you. So that's that. Science is the smartest guy in the room until they're proven wrong. Then they just go with it, and then they adapt, and then they're the smartest guy again. So the mentality behind it is people need to have a little bit more humility when they're thinking about debunking ETs, because they're way ahead of us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, can we, well, you're coming forth talking about these stories. I mean, I guess then the question becomes, is this all about a movement of the people then? Is there any person, you know, in a weird way, I'm going, wait a minute, Tony, you know, you're coming out with this book, you're doing this, but what if you had gone... actually, they probably wouldn't let you. But I was going to say, what if somebody was smart enough to never talk about their experience in the secret space program, run for office to get inside, do a stealth operation from the inside, and then once they're in the top, they go, okay, yeah, I'm a senator, and let me tell you this, I was part of this program. I mean, why is it never done that way? So we can all just have this disclosed.
Well, you know, there's a lot of presidents that say, I forget, Jimmy Carter had
an experience. Yeah.
And he said, as soon as I get in office, I'm going to let you know. And I think Bill Clinton promised it. I think, I don't think Trump promised it, but we've had a slew of presidents that were like, Ronald Reagan said, as soon as I know, I'm going to tell you guys. And what happens is, what Carter did and what Clinton did, all of them, Obama, they all get in the office and they all of a sudden they go, I can't talk about it. That's it, really.
Yeah,
they get briefed, they go in, they get briefed, and they go, I can't talk about it. So they, you know, that's what we're seeing. So that's happening. So the senator that would get in on the inside, that's what I mean. Imagine you're a senator, imagine you have inside information and you want to say, and you wait, just like you said, you infiltrate and you become president and then you speak about it. you're up against people that can tell somebody back in time to not let you get elected because you're going to talk about it. Do you get what
right.
I mean?
Like,
that's really the case, is that we're talking about time travel, and nobody wants to believe that, but physics believes it. And physicists are quite aware that time travel is very possible, and that traveling instantly over great distances is very possible as well. We're starting to get disclosure. There, in the past, somebody that came forward and talked like me would have been killed or shut up or otherwise somehow, you know, debunked.
Right.
And what we're getting now is they're letting us talk, because we're getting to the point in technology where somebody is going to be able to roll out something out of their garage that can find that can prove the ET life is out there. And we're getting more technology. We're, you know, as we advance, they're going to not be able to keep the lie. You know, it's easy to shut up 20 people a year, but now it's 200 or 2000 or 20,000 or 2 million. And they're getting to the point where they can't keep up the lie. The choice is either going to be to have us have a giant war and set us back in time in technology, bomb us back to the Stone Ages kind of strategy,
right,
or just disclose. And we're going to get a we're seeing steps, great steps towards disclosure. That's exactly what we're seeing right now. We're seeing them take the necessary steps towards a controlled disclosure of extraterrestrial, not only life, but intelligent extraterrestrial life and extraterrestrial societies that we're going to end up doing business with and trade with. So it'll happen all at once, I'm sure. And we're going to get, they're already admitting UAPs. The UAP report came out, and now they're starting to reiterate. They came out and they kind of said, okay, there's UAPs, which no, everybody said, oh, well, that's silly. There's no UFOs. The government would have admitted it, would have said something. There's no remark. So now we have a remark and nobody batted an eye. Really, nobody cared. They came
I know,
out
isn't
on
that
news,
crazy?
On the...
Years ago, it was so outrageous to talk about flying saucers. I mean, people just would. It was the stuff of X-Files. It was pure. It was just fiction.
They made it they made it comedy. So they always crack a joke. They always make fun. Like you're like it's the. They always associate it with the feeling of being picked on in school. You know what I'm saying? Like it's got that emotion around it. Whenever they talk about ETs.
Right.
It's got the emotion of, yeah, like you're going to get picked on. So everybody's afraid of it. And they came out. So as a result, they came out and said UAPs are real. And everybody's like, oh, I can't, I'm not even going to remark about it. So now they're starting to say, look, we said UAPs are real. You're starting to see it regurgitate into the media again. Like, look, we told you these are real.
Yeah.
And nobody cared. And I said that I was at a convention in Vegas. And I was walking down Fremont Street, the one with the big the television screen.
Oh, yeah.
And we were having this conversation. We had this conversation. I said, look, if I walked right down this middle of these 10,000 people or how many people's here with a gray next to me, and the gray telepathically said good morning in the people's minds as we walked by, and we were on camera, and this got out on the news tonight, nobody would care. Because they wouldn't see it would just be another trick. Yeah, whatever. I'm sure that's some gimmick. It's some magic trick or whatever. Nobody would care. Even if I walked with 10 grays down the street and it was on camera and filmed and it was on the news, nobody would care. It wouldn't really change. Nobody would be won over. There were a few people but it wouldn't get the fanfare that like a Kardashian episode would get. It just wouldn't, because everybody's so, we've been conditioned to laugh at the subject for so long, for our whole life. You've been conditioned, you've been programmed subliminally and subconsciously, you've been programmed to laugh at people that talk about it.
So you think part of the agenda here with regards to disclosing is to, really get people, change people's consciousness around the fact that this is part of our reality and it is real. It's not just a magic trick.
So we'll probably get incremental steps towards disclosure, and we've already had this one.
Yes.
We've already had the UAP is like step one. We're going to get incremental steps. And you understand that post disclosure, like when it's finally on the news every night, and we have access to their internet. So that's really what's going to happen is before you see a visitor in person, you're going to get access to an internet that is on a solar system scale or a galactic scale. We're going to be able to see pictures of other planets and things. Like, there's going to be a level of disclosure where we have access to an intergalactic internet. Wow. Once that happens, once we get to that point, it's going to be all anybody ever talks about. You understand that everything else is going to be completely dwarfed. Like, all media, everything is, it's going to be the only thing that anybody cares about, really, because we're going to see reality. We're going to see what other species live like. We're going to get pictures and video from there. We're going to see space exploration for real. And at that point, it's going to be the only thing that is, instead of people laughing about it, people are not going to put it down at that point.
It just
seems like that's going to be the logical thing. Like, everybody laughed at televisions when they came out, when they were black and white. There was one TV in the whole neighborhood, and they laughed. They said, too expensive. That's crazy. And computers the same way. You were a geek if you had a computer. There was one computer in the whole neighborhood. Now there's four or five in a house. And the televisions, there's four or five televisions. You get what I'm saying? Everybody has a computer in their pocket, and they're stuck glued to the phone all the time. That's what disclosure is going to look like. Right now, we are the people that we're the geeks that have computers that everybody's laughing at. But one day, you're going to have it in your own pocket.
Wow, 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 wow. Now, tell me this. Did they ever, in terms of time travel, could they take you to a future where it's accepted? I mean, did you go there?
No. So, okay. Time travel is policed by... There are beings that live outside of time space that are in, I don't know, like an ether. There's other dimensions.
There's like a higher dimension. Yeah.
Everybody knows, when you die, you go somewhere. I mean, some atheists believe when you die that that's it. You're just switch off and nothing else happens. And that's the end of everything for you. But I don't believe that. I believe in reincarnation. We've had great evidence of reincarnation and people living past lives and being born and having great detailed memories of their last life that check out. And so there's a great argument to be made for that. So that only means that there's another layer of reality that we don't have access to. And because of that, there are beings that live in that police time travel. So that's what I was made aware of when I was on Ceres Colony. I had conversations with people. Why don't we just go back in time and get rich? Why don't we just go and capture resources and use time travel? Because you can't, it'll get policed. They will actually step in and intervene. And there is time travel allowed, but only to a certain extent. And so to go back and change, like, there's always if there's time travel, go back and kill Hitler and then not have World War II.
Right.
So there are things that there are bigger things that we don't see. There's a bigger picture. And so time travel isn't allowed on that. And the other thing is, when you think about that, it also justifies the security. Like, you can't just give willy-nilly anybody time travel, right? It's a security issue. And that justifies the lie. It justifies the president saying, I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? So that's the kind of the deal. And I think that what we're seeing is that there's a lot of credible evidence coming forward that the government has anti-grav craft that are work on anti-grav, and that opens the door to time travel or manipulation of time space. And so there's where the level of security is. They're basically going to give us disclosure, but they're not going to give us the anti-grav at first. There's going to have to be ways that happens that are safe for everybody. Obviously, not everybody's ready to have a time machine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, did you, what kind of time travel did you encounter machines ship or on the colony? I mean, what kind of technology are we talking
about? My highest job I got was a cargo engineer on an interstellar trade ship, which was a smaller ship. And we would leave, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to put it in terms that we understand. But say if we left at 8 a.m. on Monday morning to go on our mission, and we would hit five or six stops, and we'd work 7-8 hours, we would return at 7:55 in the morning, 5 minutes away from the colony. So that the people in the colony could see the ship and know that the mission went well. and then okay us to leave. And if the ship didn't come back 5 minutes before, they would scrub the mission because it was lost. So that way they could schedule aggressive missions that way. So we would do that, and I would leave. I would literally, you know, it took 15 minutes to get on the ship, and it was like 15, 20 minutes to put everything up and get off the ship. So I would leave at, I'd get on the ship at 7:30, and I'd get off it at 8:30 after working an 8-hour day because of the anti-telephoning mission profile that they called it. They called it anti-telephoning. And that was a lot. That was a loophole in the rules of time travel that they did.
Yeah. When we're talking about how you got there and back, I mean, was it just abductions? Was there a wormhole that opened up that they pulled you through? I mean, what did that look like?
So the Einstein-Rosen bridge thing is real, and the portal technology is very real. It requires a great deal of electrical power, or, you know, power output. And the ships were actually classed by their power output. The ship I was on was a cargo ship, and it was smaller. There were battleships that could jump farther and travel farther in distance per jump and jump again immediately. Our ship could jump, I believe, like a third of the distance of the galaxy, around the galaxy, like a third of the distance per jump. And it took 15 or 20 minutes to recharge and make another jump. Battleships could jump half the distance or two thirds of the distance and immediately jump again. They had greater power output. That's how it was based. So a lot of the space program is based on tech that they lease from other civilizations that have that power. Like the secret space programs have free energy, they have portal technology, but a lot of the high power output functions where they could make a portal from here to the other side of the galaxy, they don't have. Those are the level of technology that they either lease or borrow from somebody else, because it's about power output. That's the technology race in space is about power output.
I was going to say, is this all space related stuff? I mean, is everything happening above the Earth somewhere in outer space, or were you ever on any military bases, underground military bases on this planet? Like, I don't know, Los Alamos Labs. I know there's a lot of connection and stuff like that.
We regularly picked up and delivered cargo to Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. That was a spaceport back in the 90s for us. And we would go there in the middle of the night on a ship full of Germans from the Ceres colony. We had a black, spaceship about 1,000 feet long. And we would go there and pick up and drop off cargo very often. And there were places in the Catarina Mountains in South America. We went and delivered cargo, and, I think there was a place in Europe we went, and we did go to Antarctica on a few times for inspection. We got inspected. They called the under the ice base in Antarctica the High Command, and we went there for inspection on several occasions.
So tell me this. So you're telling me right now, and I know there's I really want to get this clear. If people were to go to Antarctica, if they allowed you to, which is on a whole other thing, but if you were to go there and go under the ice, would they actually encounter a base?
Well, Antarctica is a big place, but yes, there are bases under the ice in Antarctica. Yeah. And I wouldn't, you know, I mean, I don't know exactly where, because I was at my post. I just paid attention for my job. I paid attention to when we were going to be there, not where we were going.
Yeah.
But yes, there was a huge dome of melted from volcanic activity, and there were buildings, and there was a lot going on there. And in Antarctica, yes, they're, in a nutshell, they're under the ice bases. And in fact, well, I mean, other people have come forward and said that there was entrances to large caverns that are under the, you know, inside the Earth's crust.
I know you did an interview with Eric J. Hecker. I interviewed him as well. He had a very interesting
Eric's
experience.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, just a wild experience. Now, he didn't actually encounter any ETs or flying saucers, but there is something weird about Antarctica.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and especially because you can't just go there. You know, it's off limits. There's a treaty about it to where you just can't go there. I mean, that's kind of strange, because it's ice. It seems like of all the they don't care if you ruin the Amazon ecosystem, you can go there and chop it down and burn it down and mine gold and poison it. That's fine. But Antarctica, where it's just essentially a block of ice and some penguins, you can't go there for ecological reasons. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Super strange. Super strange. Okay. So you're part of this. You are right. Oh, my gosh, Tony, you're right. You had to write this book because I'm going to have to read this book for sure. There is so much here. I mean, so many questions. How can you ever fully tell the story? I mean, 20 year abduction. Yeah, and I think that's an interesting word, too. I mean, it's not just it was 20 years of you being on some alien craft for 20 years. This is like they abducted you from your home. You remember 30 minutes of the beginning of it, and you're doing various tests. I mean, there's this story about Peru, which I found fascinating, why you were brought there. Can you talk a little bit about that mission?
The first program that I was in. So basically, essentially, I was taken for 20 years, but I was used from program to program. And when I got to the point where I wasn't useful for a program, they would sell me off to another one. I was just a piece of equipment, basically.
Oh my gosh.
And so Peru was the first stop I went to. When they took me, they put me under, you know, I'm in a lab full of grays. And you'd ask if it was a ship. I believe it was an underground base. It was a base somewhere. And, you know, they did a surgery on me and I woke up. I had no memory of where I came from. I didn't remember my mom or dad or brother or sister, none of that. I had amnesia. And I was in Inyo Kern, California, at the airport there. And they had little portables that they put us through. And it was a torturous, trauma-based mind control program. And they were teaching us, they were programming us. And they were teaching us remote viewing. And they ended up giving us drugs and bringing us near to death. And when we were near to death, we were talking, we were channeling other people. Other people would talk through us. Even though we were kids, I was like 10 years old. There were times when I would speak like an adult. And they were getting information, you know, past and future events that was accurate information. And so what they did was they sent me to Peru. There was a town, Puerto Tahuantinsuyo, Peru, and they were stockpiling shipments of cocaine would come up the river, you know, a little bit at a time. And when they had a plane load, they would fly a plane from there to Santa Marta, Colombia, and drop it off at the airport, and it would get on a boat and go somewhere else. But they lost one of the planes that crashed. And so they were paying to have me there. And we would take off. It was once a month, the plane load would go and we would take off. And it was a propeller, like a cargo plane, a C-46 commando. And he would give me an IV, put an IV in my arm with a bag, you know, and he would give me a drug and I would go near to death. And he said, when I woke up that he was talking to his grandmother, and he said there were times I spoke in fluent Spanish, which I don't know Spanish. And I didn't then.
Yeah.
And I was answering questions. I was channeling information. So I was a security measure so that if the plane got lost, they would ask me where to go. If there were police, are there going to be police there? Is it clear to land? And I would, you know, it was an information that like a radar for them, but there was a psychic ability. And if you think about that for the war on drugs, I mean, it's no wonder they can get away with what they have. That's a technology they had in the 80s. And then I eventually kind of lost that ability. And they, you know, after about 2 years, and then I went back to Seattle.
So you gained psychic abilities. I mean, is this kind of the similar stuff? What's the difference between this program and the effort to create psychic spies and super soldiers? I mean, why does this one work better than that other one that you also hear about? I don't know if it was Stargate and some of these other programs where they're actually trying to train.
So I found the dates and the places, and I used the CIA declassified online library, the online declassified library.gov, right. I believe. And I went on there and I started poking around, and I remembered the words grill flame from the class that we were in at the time. And they were funds from grill flame. There are some prominent people that were involved that I don't speak about publicly. I've shared with researchers and it gets researched. But there are people that I wouldn't name publicly because, you know, I could get a lawsuit or something.
Right.
Or worse. And, but it sure, they all checked out just how I remembered them. And Grill Flame, when they was a smaller budget, and when they got results, then it turned into Project Center Lane, and Project Center Lane branched off to adults, and then it was Project Gateway, and then right. I believe Project Stargate after that. So mine was an early project. So it wasn't about working better. It was just that, you know, it was in the '80s, and who knows where it's at today. I guarantee it's not canceled.
Yeah.
But I, sure enough, the personnel, and there are some other things that, you know, the methods that they used of the mind control, there were personnel involved with the Stanford Research Institute and the Project Grill Flame that were pioneered during that project that I had remembered and talked about to researchers back in 2015. And then I researched it and it all came together. It's like, again, not a smoking gun, but also exactly how I remember it.
Yeah. So
it substantiates my story, but it's just not like standalone proof. But that was what I went through in the beginning. It was a human-based program that had access to space program. I guess, you know, like a level of security clearance of secret space program.
Very fascinating. Tony, something else that intrigues me is that, and I know the story goes a lot deeper. There's like a sex slave aspect of it too. That is just sounds highly traumatic. yeah. Is that related at all to, I mean, and we're talking about sex slavery. I mean, that gets into the realms of, the child stuff that we hear, the reptilians. Absolutely. And the children and the, yeah. I mean, so, which apparently has never stopped. It's still going on.
At the time in 2015, when I, you know, these are things that I remembered them. So I shared them with researchers and I was still kind of like, I can't believe this. It was real. But again, I found the house. I found it on Google Earth. And in 2016, I went there and it was, you know, it was what I remembered. And it was a big part of my memories. So I included it. And this was in 15. And it wasn't until 16 and 17, 18 that the Pizzagate happened and the Hillary emails right. and all that stuff broke later. So I was talking about it connected to the space program before the information came out and everybody started, or even if you want to call it a conspiracy theory, I was talking about it before the conspiracy theory came out.
Right. And it
turned out, sadly, came out and vindicated what I was saying. And, you know, the people, I found the people. Like there are, you know, there's a paper trail of the people involved. I hired a private investigator and looked up the people. Two of them that were my owners have since passed away, but they have family members and such, so I don't speak about them. But that was exactly what I remember. A lot of the things that we hear about today that is, they're trying to debunk it. The media is trying to debunk the whole, the pedophilia in politics. They're trying to debunk that. The networks, some of them, CNN in particular, are trying very hard to debunk it. And now they're getting in trouble for it. It turns out that their senior producers are involved in pedophilia. And people heads are starting to roll, you know, in that. But that was something that I remembered, and they were very good at it during that time. I spent 2 years living in Seattle in a house with a bunch of other boys, and we were trafficked. For parties, for political parties, and they were political fundraisers for the local. And I found all kinds of paperwork or, you know, online articles for the local paper for the parties back then. I, you know, you could go back and dig those. And I found proof of the parties even after I described the parties first, and then I found the proof that they existed. It wasn't vice versa, but to researchers. So, and that's why I've been able to talk about this, you know, this stuff, because I did go on record, and then things got, you know, I had enough supporting evidence.
Yeah.
It's not everybody has this luxury. Not everybody that has these memories has a luxury of supporting evidence.
Holy moly. I mean, this is, yeah, and it's certainly interesting that this Ghislaine Maxwell interview, or no, not interview, Ghislaine Maxwell case has come up, and we don't know any of the other names associated with her and Epstein. I mean, we do know some names, but they haven't officially gone on record and said, hey, how about all these people who were famous that were involved? Why don't we know who they are? Why aren't they accountable?
Yeah, well, they're they're a club of people that are in the right places. You know, government is infested with them, and there are people in high places that can, you face it, can make things go away. And that is definitely the case. The Maxwell case. So the people that had me in Seattle, they had a special garden on the, like a circular garden built on the grounds. And what I found was that Epstein had a place in Arizona that had the same garden, same shaped garden. When you look at it from, when you look at it from the satellite on Google Earth, he had one of those gardens as well. So this is a cult, or at least a fraternity of people that are all very wealthy, very powerful, and very much on the same page. And, you know, I talk about it all the time. I mention it all the time that, you know, to the common man, the official recommendation is don't have sex, or just get married, have one person, don't be sexual. It's bad. But then we're seeing that these people all globally, all over the world, they get in trouble almost daily, and we find out details of their life and that they're actually quite sexual.
Right. Right. Yeah, it is. It's pretty messed up, man. Oh, my gosh. And then the moon. Now, look, here's my question about you and the moon and Mars and all this stuff. What is up with the movement of people that say we've never been to the moon? Does that still work with your experience? I mean, do you think they faked the moon landing, but you went to the actual moon? Or so, what do you think about that?
So we went to the moon several times in the later ones. So while they had to fake the landings as well. So they did film the landings, and they did go to the moon because they were having live coverage. They were having live coverage of the networks, and they had to have something to cut to in case an ET did show up. Do you understand?
Right.
So there were, according, if you, I don't know if you're familiar with William Tompkins.
Yeah.
Selected by extraterrestrials. So he states that when the Apollo mission was there, that there were actually ETs on the basin of the crater. And so they had, so in a studio, they were also faking the moon landings. They were filming it so that live TV didn't see the ETs in the background. They could cut to another feed. You know, the network television wasn't as advanced back then. And that was part of the thing of covering up ETs. That was part of one of their techniques. So that's what I believe happened. We did go to the moon. We do have satellites that have the ability to see the actual tracks and the rovers that are still there. We still have hardware on the moon, and people can see them. And there, we have telescopes now that can see them. So it's been proven. The flat Earth stuff is out there, and I feel really bad. There are people that just don't have a great grasp of physics. You know what I mean? Like gravity,
right.
There's no way that gravity works on a flat Earth, and there's no way that the firmament, they call it a firmament, there's no way that something that big could hold up a television screen 20,000 miles long. So there's just no way. The physicists don't support it, but they know that something's, these people know that they're being lied to in some fashion, and they're grasping to the flat Earth theory, but it's basically just a big lie. It's a test to see how far they have to, how well they have to lie to brainwash a certain amount of people. That's what flat Earth really is. It's a debunk, you know. So now people like me come out and they say, this guy's a secret space program conspiracy theory, just like the flat Earth. And now your average person that's watching this on the news goes, ah, forget that. And they turn it. You get what I mean? They lose interest immediately as soon as you're associated with a flat Earth person. And that's why flat Earth exists, and why they spent so much money and put so much effort into selling it to people and making it look real. But anybody with a grasp of astronomy or physics knows that flat Earth isn't possible. You can prove the Earth is round to yourself. None of these people ever do. They let YouTube do it for them. So that's what flat Earth is.
That's interesting. So wait a minute. What is happening on the moon then?
The moon is exactly what NASA wanted it to be in the early 60s. It's a depot. It's a stop to the rest of the solar system. It's the first stop on the way to the rest of. That was the original, the Von Braun plan of NASA in the very beginning was to make a space station around the Earth, then make a space station around the moon, then a base on the moon to refuel and to get rockets up. And then go on to Mars and beyond. That's the plan. That's the logical way to do that. And the moon is exactly that. But the moon, has a great deal going on there, and it's been there a long time. So on the backside of the moon, there's actually a great deal of, you know, I don't know the actual population of the moon, but there's a great deal of people that live there. And by people, I mean ETs.
Hmm.
And so the Germans, when they got into space in the very beginning, in the 30s, late 30s, early 40s, went up there and made contact. And that's where they made their initial, treaties with the Orion group. So the moon is the Earth itself. We are the crop here. We are the farm for ETs to come through and use us for whatever, or labor or genetics, whatever it is. And they can stop on the moon and access us from there.
Interesting. And even Mars, I mean, look, Mars is, well, yeah, we have this big story here on Earth, right, that we're going to go to Mars one day. Elon Musk colonizing Mars. What is, have humans been on Mars forever?
Talked to Randy Kramer privately, and he tried to come up with a number. He said he guesstimates there's something like 10 and a half million people living on Mars right now. Forever, wow. I don't know, but we went to Mars in the 40s, I believe, and they started colonizing there, and there are other species. Mars is not a totally dead world. There are species that live there. There are plants that live there. Mars, most people don't know this, but at certain parts around the equator, it's about 70 degrees during the day.
Interesting.
A lot of people are shocked by that, but we have massive underground bases on Mars, and it's actually a thriving world, you know.
I mean, what is that rover picking up then?
Well, I mean, you know, you can put a rover in Death Valley and not know that there's Hollywood true. In California. So that's a lot point. Of people are a lot of people think the rover is doing more than, you know, the rovers go about something like 2 miles an hour or something like that. No, not even. I forget what 200 feet an hour is. Some they're very slow. They're very slow, and they go a very short ways. Over yeah. a lifespan, they might go a couple miles. And so you think about where you could hide a rover. You could put a rover in Death Valley or many places, anywhere out west. You know,
you wouldn't think they're humans. You're right.
Yeah, you wouldn't know anything. You wouldn't know anything about Hollywood if you had a rover in California. So that's Mars is the same way. And most of the things in Mars, so out into the space programs, because they're outside of the protection treaty of extraterrestrials, which when I'm saying this is extraterrestrials don't interfere with the Earth because there's a treaty, a non-interference treaty. The outside of Earth, that there is no treaty, so people don't just leave their base on top of where everybody can see it with big neon lights, because another ET will come along and invade you, take it over. So most yeah. of the bases are hidden for that reason. So they want some anonymity because you don't know who's going to show up. It's a security measure, and all of the bases are underground.
Will we ever see it? I mean, will we ever? That sounds like a big disclosure thing. I mean, if people knew that people were living on Mars, that would twist some people's brains for sure.
I think we can handle it. You know, they always say that we're not gonna, that people would go crazy, and I think that's BS. People can handle it. I think that they just want to. It's a more complicated subject than that. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't want to go into explaining it, but you know, we have to be at a certain level of lifestyle before we can interact with them. Right.
Yeah.
So we are very primitive. That's the thing. We're very arrogant thinking we're not primitive. We're very primitive. You look just in my lifetime. So I'm 49, and just in my lifetime, look at how far, gay rights have moved. Look at how far women have come. Or, you know, the people say there's a lot of racism. There's still a lot less than there was when I was young. So we've moved the needle of progression in our society a great deal in a short time. And we still have ways to go before we have ETs here. We still have a lot of prejudices, and we have a lot of things in our, we do have racism. We do have sexism. We do have a lot of bigotry, and it goes in every direction. It's not just, you know, men that are abusive of women, you know, we have sexism. And so how are we going to introduce another species here until we can handle, living with each other? So we are close, we're very, very close, but we're not exactly. They want to make sure that we're ready to deal with every species, because once we get to the point where we're interacting with one species, we're going to get thousands, maybe millions of species that we get to interact with. And we're going to have to swallow our pride, and we're going to have to deal with a lot of species that we may not agree with their lifestyle. And so we have to, you know, we have to get cool about a lot of stuff real fast. Like that meme says, there's a meme that says, we have to get real cool about a lot of stuff real fast, and then we'll get our disclosure we need. But I think we're seeing the social engineering coming into place that is going to enable that. I think we've come a long way, and Lord knows the kids nowadays are so open-minded. You know, if you look at the young kids these days, the teenagers in high school, they're very much more open-minded than we were, than I was when I was their age. And I was pretty open-minded.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, one of the things that you said early on that I'm still trying to sort through is if they're preparing us for disclosure now, is it a better they than the ones that were putting you through an MK Ultra program back in the day? I mean, have the powers that be, has the Illuminati had a new branch of people that are nicer, or should we be weary of different people
out
there?
We should always be weary. Okay, we're not going to be run by good people.
Right.
We're not going to be ran by bad people. We're going to be ran by people. And that's the truth. That's another lie that we're conditioned to. Every bit of entertainment or fiction that you've ever been exposed to in your whole life had a good guy that was always good and a bad guy that was always bad. Right?
Yeah.
And so we're conditioned to believe that people or ETs or whatever are always good and always bad. And that's not the truth. You know, on any given day, I'm a good guy. And on another given day, I'm cranky and I'm a bad guy. And that's what, you know, even though we have some psychopathic people that are very damaged, very insane, very damaged, and sociopathic behavior people that are in charge, I got to believe that they're not all evil, that they, you know, that their common interests with our common interests are going to line up at some point and make sense. They're not going to burn down the whole world just so that they can stay in power, even though some of them will, but there has to be enough of them that are just it's a matter of logic and not morals, that it just makes sense to do things for the greater good. Just out of pure logic. And I don't like labeling people good or evil, because I know it's a fake construct for us.
Yeah,
it's so they can point at somebody and say, "Hey, they're evil, they're bad. That guy supports this, and that's bad. They're evil. Get them."
So would you invite a member of the Illuminati over to dinner?
You know what, I would not.
Yeah, why is that?
Because to me it would be poking a hornet's nest.
Right. Yeah, but you wouldn't want that.
I wouldn't point a gun at one either. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't choose to hurt somebody either. You know, like, I believe that there's karma, and what comes around goes around, and everybody has to answer for their decisions. And these people make bad decisions. I make bad decisions. I make good decisions. It's just, you know, life. And I'm not super judgmental, I put it that way. But I feel like I wouldn't want to spend time with one because of what I know, because they have I don't like being around people that have a lot of power over me. I just don't.
Yeah. Very fascinating. Very fascinating, Tony. And again, everybody needs to check out this book, which Ceres Colony, Cavalier is the name of the book. Where's the Ceres Colony?
So Ceres is a small planetoid in between Mars and the asteroid belt. It's a dwarf planet. And that was colonized. The Germans went there and found the ruins of an underground base that some other race had built, who maybe a million years ago, who knows. And they moved in and they started to build their own interior, European-style cities inside of it, in caverns inside. And they connected them with trains. And there was about 250,000 people living there when I was there from, 86 till... 87 or 88 till 2000 was when I lived there. That's how long I was there. And so there's a Ceres Colony Corporation. All the solar system bodies are broken up into corporations, Mars Colony Corporation, Ceres Colony Corporation, Luna Corporation. There's an Earth Colony Corporation.
I want to see what's going on in these planets. I mean, I really am fascinated by this idea, but they're never gonna let us until the time's right. No one could just come up with an independent rocket.
Well, you know, I'm very hopeful we're going to get a disclosure. At this point, we're just talking about their existence.
Right.
And I'm very confident, I'm very hopeful that we'll get a disclosure in the next few years, possibly, you know, very advanced. But we got to bring people up to speed. Most people don't want to hear what we're talking about here today. They're all hogwash and they want to get back to watching TV. And so we have to get over that. We have to make this the secret space program, the 20 and back, 20 year tour. We have to make it a household name first.
Yeah. Obviously your account is very important. Are there other people who, you mentioned Randy Kramer. How else would you get the full story of the secret space program? What would you recommend?
I'm a big fan of Dr. Sala. I recommend people to ExoPolitics just because when I worked with him, he was so professional with me and he does a great job of vetting people. So anybody right. that speaks for him on his show, he's put a lot of work into checking them out, making sure they have evidence. He doesn't just put anybody up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Randy Kramer's got some info. I think he took his last website down. I don't know the new one. There have been a lot of other people that have come forward, but they come and go. My website has some links to people. Maybe I'll get a collection up there in the next few months of places to look. But I've got TonyRodriguez.com. But I would recommend ExoPolitics.org for anybody that's just new to this and needs to get it info. There's a great deal of info in there. And there's actually quite a bit that's happened. I mean, there's been in the last 5 years, there's been a lot of news about what's happened, been happening in our solar system and leading up to events of disclosure, because we've been ruled by people that want to keep us under thumb and not disclose. And it seems like the program, the secret space programs, have stepped up and are really working towards bringing us into a Star Trek future.
Yeah. What do you think Space Force is?
That's exactly it. It's the groundwork for a Star Trek type organization.
It is so weird that they would just decide to have an intergalactic army base. I mean, or just, yeah, an army for that. I mean, what are we fighting if not other? I guess other countries could have rocket wars with each other, but that does not seem like enough of a reason.
There's actually been quite a bit that's happened in space militarily, and it is a fighting domain that needs to be, you know, other people like China, I guess, is more advanced than us in the space domain.
Right.
And so we need to keep up with them to defend ourselves, for one. I guess the creation of the Space Force, they've been trying since the 90s. And it keeps getting voted down by the other branches because they don't want to share past the mic kind of thing. And they got to the point, and I guess the creation of the Air Force was the same way. You know, back when they had airplanes, the Navy didn't want an Air Force to exist.
Yeah.
But we look back at it now and go, how stupid is that? You've got to have an Air Force.
Of course.
That's kind of what the Space Force is. The same kind of politics went into the creation of it. So having the Space Force created was actually a great step for us all. You know, we're talking on computers that are spending information on satellites that are coming from the space race that we had in the 60s. You get what I mean?
Like, right.
Going into space, you leave the ETs out of it. Let's pretend there's no life up there. Going into space and going to the moon and going to Mars is going to enable us. This is going to give us technologies that are going to make our life better. The scanning laser beam on your, when you check out at the grocery store, the little laser in there that scans the barcode was directly developed for the Apollo program. That, you know what I'm saying? They paid the money for research and development for the Apollo program to go to the moon. And that's how the scanning works in your grocery store. Like, that's just one thing. There are thousands and thousands of things that got developed from spaceflight that we have in our everyday, like plastics, polymers, on and on and on. Kevlar.
Yeah,
these are things that are from developed for space flight. So for us to keep going into space and have a space force is how we're going to get new cool things.
Yeah, I was going to say, in your explorations, did you ever encounter any of the Nikola Tesla technology that supposedly they use for teleportation, time travel, stuff like that.
Well, there was nothing that said Nikola Tesla on it.
Right, right.
And, you know, I'm not super familiar with a lot of the things that he, proposed. You know, he invented a lot of things that we have today, but a lot of the things was theoretical for him. And, like, I didn't see any kind of, like, remote power chain, you know, devices or anything. We had batteries. Yeah. We had battery tools. When my time up there, when I was working basic 9 to 5, we had computer, you know, we had flat screen computers. We had clear, their phones were clear. And the reason being is if you stare at your phone long enough, it damages your eyes. But if it's clear, your eye can focus beyond it and you won't damage your eyes. That's why they had clear. But, basically, everything was just battery powered. It was all based on power. Like I said, everything was based on power output, and they had gravity manipulation. We had artificial gravity and gravity plating that was powered, and that was made possible with access to rare elements that we don't have a lot of here on the Earth. So that's how they did that. But that was basically, in a nutshell, the tech, at least that I was exposed to. I didn't have access to tech up there. I was a slave. It was like being a prisoner for me, so I had a pretty dismal existence as far as
that's what it sounds access. Like keeps happening. Certainly the people I've interviewed, I interviewed two people that claimed they were part of Project Pegasus, and it all sounds like they just don't want to pay. Government does not pay people well for being super soldiers.
Absolutely. Especially at this point, it's the Wild West for the as far as the government's concerned. And until the public sector gets up there and there's a different standard of living demanded, they're going to take advantage every way they can.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony, look, I mean, this has been amazing. Again, for more of this, there's so much more here. Everybody has to check out the book. Ceres Colony Cavalier. Tell me this. Was there any early 80s? There is a claim. Someone I've interviewed, I love asking people this question because I just want to figure out what this guy's talking about. Andrew DiBisciago, Project Pegasus, Chrononaut, claims that in the early 80s, he was part of something called Project Mars with Barack Obama.
Dump room technology. Yeah. Yes. I've talked to Andy before. I did a phone call and talked to him for a couple hours once personally, and it was great. Andy, he's a brilliant person.
But, yeah, what do you think? What do you think about his stories?
I absolutely believe that there's jump room technology and that they're going to Mars. So, and then because the surface of Mars is inaccessible, they can put a city, and then a few miles down from there, they can put a different city and it can be ran completely differently. And I think that's the case, that some of them are militarized, some of them are public, have public access. And I think that the presidential program, I think the presidents have access to time dilation for sure. That's why they always look so old when they're done with their term. I think that the president is 4 years president for us, but they're gone more like 8 or 10 years and have access to it without getting their memories deleted.
Wow.
I absolutely believe in Andre's story about Project Pegasus. I believe it's the real deal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And to top this all off, I mean, it sounds like this regression thing you went through when they brought you back. And we're not just talking age regression hypnotically. They actually, what is that? What is that technology that they have?
It was a long process. And honestly, I always tell people, it's just like, well, if you get surgery on your spleen and then you get better, you don't know what they did to your spleen. And but they want me, there was a very long process of deleting my memories. They don't just give you a pill or one thing. They put you through several different stations. One is set for forgetting faces. One is set for forgetting names. One is set for forgetting times. You know, they target different areas of your brain.
And, why do you think
the experience
you're...
was
that? Or no, tell me about the experience, because I'm curious about that first.
The experience was I just woke up back in my body on the laboratory with ETs again, and I forgot the 20 years and had my memories back of my mom and dad. Like I was back into boom, I woke up and I was in a 10-year-old body again going, wow, that, so what are we doing, guys? You know, I was naive.
And they so they shrunk back. Your body physically, too. They brought you back.
You know, yeah, so other people say that that's the tech. I don't know because I was like out of it when it happened. So I don't know how it happened. Right. So, you know, I'm sure there's more than one way to do it. And there's more, there's many possible ways, but the, I was put under, so it's like, I can't describe the surgery, you know?
Does anybody in your family remember things from this time? Does anybody in your family remember you missing for a period? There's nothing.
No, no. Here's what I remember. The next morning I woke up and I went to school and I was a different person. I was a completely different kid. And at the time, I remember my dad saying it several times. I want my son back. What happened to you? And but I was different. My personality completely changed overnight. And I felt like when I walked down the stairs from my bedroom the next morning, I felt like I hadn't set foot in that house for 20 years. I was lost in my own house. And that's how I experienced it.
Wow. Can members of your family testify to that? Will they say, yeah, there was a period where he just changed suddenly?
No, it was a long time ago. And like, I don't really talk to my dad much anymore. And I don't tell my mom about this stuff. I really don't discuss it with my mom. And, you know, my sister kind of, she was there and remembers a little bit about it, but not too lot.
Wow. It's all so fascinating. Yeah. Well, look, everybody, TonyRodriguez.com. You can also, in addition to buying this book, which is just getting very glowing reviews, it sounds fascinating. You also have this recall course for working with people to bring back memories of these. Well, I imagine these kind of programs, but really it could work for anything that, you know, maybe a traumatic experience or something that you're trying to. I mean, what kind of people typically reach out to you for?
Usually people that are abductees or have some kind of ET experience, but it does work for other kinds of trauma. It's basically pre-hypnotic. It's something that not as intense as a hypnotic regression. It's a set of exercises that you incorporate into your day, and over time you start to get your memories back. And because in the beginning I knew I had the big bullet point memories, but I was like, I had to use the bathroom. What was that? Where was the bathroom? I brushed my teeth. How did I do that? And I started doing these exercises and I got those memories back. And so I started recommending it to people over and over again. And I finally just put it in the course, and it's $40. And most people get it and I get a lot of great feedback about it. It works. It's something that if you have fragmented memories, if you have memories of things and you don't remember, there's things you want to remember, you know, that's there and you know, something happened, but you can't remember it, then that course will help you.
Yeah.
And that's what that does. And I've had a great deal of feedback, you know. It sells pretty good. I, you know, probably a dozen or two, you know, a month people. And I get a lot of good feedback about it, and it works. It's just something that it's not for everybody, but people that have something, especially traumatic, and they want to remember more, this is the way to go do it. So
How do you tell the difference between somebody who is just making up a secret space program experience versus someone that actually has?
To somebody that studied it and really, it's really put in the work and studied it, I mean, I imagine you wouldn't be able to. But there are some common denominators. There are many things that only people that are experiencers say. You know, I can leave it at that. There are other things that check out. I'm a big fan of not, it doesn't matter what happened to you that was weird, it's when it happened. I found that nobody has a one and done. Nobody just gets an ET visit on once and then never again. It always happens repeatedly throughout your life.
Right.
So there's ways to check that out. There's ways to write that down that take shape and tell me that somebody's legit. And there's a lot of common denominators.
Has anyone ever come to you and told a story and you're like, okay, this guy's actually just making it up. I do not buy this.
Yeah. Well, yes. And what I've seen recently is there's a real disturbing trend that people are being told. they don't have any memory. They don't have anything at all. And they go and somebody says, I'm a psychic and you were a super soldier. And now they're a super soldier and they want to talk about it. And then they're on YouTube talking about it. Like not only that, but you were a super soldier and you were in the Pleiadian Wars and like these big elaborate stories.
Oh, gosh.
They talk to me and I'm like, well, what do you remember? Because I don't remember anything. They told me this. I'm like, how can you justify speaking about it then if you have no memories of somebody, you know what I mean? Like, how can that be that you can trust somebody to, well, I paid them for that.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? It's a disturbing trend to me. I feel that the people that I've worked with that are legitimate always have the abduction story minimum, plus other things that they do remember. There are always fragmented little, even if it's a flash, even if it's just a split second of memory, there's always memory there.
I'm totally with you. There is a weird trend. I've seen people that look like they are younger than the hottest TikTok influencer all of a sudden say they are a secret space program survivor. And I'm going, what? Have you even, I just can't believe you. Something just strikes me as wrong there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't speak. If that was the situation with me, I wouldn't speak publicly. There's just too much you can lose. I have close friends I grew up with that will never speak to me again because they don't believe in aliens. And there's just, you get uninvited to the Christmas party when you're talking about this stuff. And it's just not worth it to speak about it unless you have some concrete evidence, you know?
Yeah. Well, hey. This is such an interesting topic. I am grateful that you were brave enough you're coming out and doing it. And also the other thing to note is if you want to talk to Tony directly, TonyRodriguez.com, you can sign up for the Patreon and you have this Talks with Tony show that you do on there.
Yeah. And,
what happens there?
Well, I had, you know, from I've done a couple hundred interviews and wow. I finally got what happened was my interview started getting erased off. They scrubbed. And so we created the Talks with Tony Patreon with a $5 paywall. So that way they won't get deleted. And I started having people that interviewed me on my show. And I'm really proud of my guest list. I have some really good, some really great, fantastic subject matter there and some really good guests that are really high quality testimonies.
Yeah.
On everything. And not only a secret, but psychic phenomenon as well. My co-host is a psychic medium.
Right. Jessica, I saw that.
And she's very profoundly gifted at connecting people. And she's a medium. And so we talk about the science about how that all that stuff's possible. We talk about everything.
Yeah, that's the thing people need to realize. It's connected. The ET thing. This is a question I wanted to put out there to a lot of my guests and friends who are interested in this community. I'm curious your answer to this. I didn't realize that the UFO and alien thing was about consciousness until very recently. And I think a lot of people just look at it as like, no, it's just this, they want sci-fi to be real. They just want to have something else. People want to believe in something besides themselves. But no, it's really about the mind and it's about the heart and it's about expanding consciousness. For those that don't know why that's the case, how would you explain it in a very simple way? Why is this, at the end of the day, the secret space room and all this stuff really about advancing humans and not just a sci-fi fantasy?
Well, at a certain level, you run out of technology. We live in a mental universe. The universe is mental. When an observer looks at a scientific experiment, they change the outcome just by simply observing it because their mind affects it. Your consciousness, the universe is made up of consciousness, not of matter strictly or time strictly. And that when you talk about, we're talking about advanced technology, we're talking about space travel, you know, genetics, healing, all that stuff. These are advanced technologies. And at the heart of that is consciousness, you know, and our human consciousness is the currency. Remember I said the moon, they're using the world as a farm. They're farming consciousness. That's the currency. They're farming consciousness up there. And we are the farm. We are the crop. And that's, you know, a hard pill to swallow. And you, that's why it's a secret. So your consciousness is what you are. You're growing. You're every, you know what I mean? Well, from the cradle to the grave, your soul is growing. And everybody knows this, but they, whether they admit it or not. And that's really why we're here. And so it's all tied together. And you, coincidentally, it's also, if you look at consciousness, you try to dig in and try to find more information about your own consciousness, that's what's been hidden.
Yes.
Not only is anti-gravity and advanced physics of time travel hidden from us, specifically anti-grav, consciousness is hidden from us as well. They've divorced consciousness from science on purpose because they don't want you to figure out how to get into space. And so consciousness is the linchpin. And that's how the Germans got in anyway. They channeled a very, very good psychic, channeled an ET and wrote down her channelings, and it was the blueprints for a spaceship. And that's how they got into space back in the 20s and 30s.
Whoa.
So that's why they've shut the door behind them. They've locked space up by stopping people from believing even in psychic phenomena. So there's a great deal of science about it. I cover it in my show. I remark about it on my website here a little bit, but that's really the truth, man. That's what separates us, our consciousness from animals or bugs or ETs is just our level of awareness.
Wow. Well, I appreciate your service, as well as your service of your time there, but also your service here, making people more aware of these things. Tony Rodriguez, everybody check out Series Colony Cavalier. We're going to link to that. We'll link to your website. Such a fascinating conversation. I learned a lot. Really making me question all my belief systems. So that's the best part. Thank you so much. This has been great.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Greg. It's been my pleasure.
Tony Rodriguez at TonyRodriguez.com. Check out that book. Again, it's, for Michael Sella to praise this person's work, Michael is a real expert in some wild stories, so it must be quite a tale. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy, who I first encountered on my birthday when I turned 31 2 years ago, for the pre-theme music. And I want to thank you, because yes, this show is much stranger than Joe Rogan and much less muscular. You're wonderful. Take care.